So I've been reading the little bit of Wilhelm Reich and the function of the orgasm, and in his introduction he talks about that the problem with the sort of contemporary moment, with the sort of fascism and war and radical discrepancies and capital and all these things, it comes down to a certain hostility to life, and he'll try to diagnose whence this hostility and how to cure it. But I'm interested in this notion of the hostility to life. I first came across that idea in meeting Nietzsche, reading the Genealogy of Morals, and then Nietzsche talks, about ressentiment, right? And the Genealogy of Morals is itself the birth of a kind of hostility to life. And Nietzsche's argument is that for the Greco-Romans, for the ancients, there was a kind of love of life. There was a kind of affirmation of a thisness. They I mean, they didn't pass judgment, but their judgment was never about good and evil. It was about good and bad. And bad was what wasn't them. What happens with morality is you get the slave revolt of the Jews of the week, and they invent this notion of evil, which makes the strong responsible for their strength and finally guilty in for their strength, right? Indebted for their strength. And the example he gives is a great one, right? Is the bird of prey, right? And he's like, from a moral perspective, right? The little lammy, is just a victim of the evil ways of the bird of prey. But from the bird of prey's perspective, he loves that little lammy, right? So it's these questions of perspectives, and from one perspective, there really is a hostility to life, and that's Nietzsche's argument that Judeo-Christianity is born of a hostility to life, that it wills a different thing. It wants the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven. That there's something wrong with this life, right? And we can talk about original sin, but that fundamentally there's this feeling that something's wrong, and we can talk about it in these very highfalutin, very abstract, or very philosophical terms about, religions and ideas and systems of knowledge. But for me and for what I see around me, it's a very real sentiment, this hostility. I mean, sometimes I'm sitting, just on my couch or in my bed, I wake up in the morning, and I think there should be something else happening. Think how insane that is. I wake up in the morning, I'm in my bed, and I somehow feel like something's wrong. Something else should be happening. I shouldn't have to get up and take care of my kid, or get up and take a shit, or get up and deal with a client, or get up and watch TV. No matter what my sort of circumstances, there's always a kind of, there's not always a kind of hostility, but sometimes there's a kind of hostility to life, to exactly what is happening right then and there. I feel a certain. I think things should be otherwise, which is such a kind of perverse notion. We believe, and this is the sort of triumph of ressentiment, the triumph of slave of morality, according to Nietzsche, which is that we believe that wishing things otherwise is the sign of the good. We're idealists. We hope. We yearn for a better day. When in fact that better day is always already here, right? That's the Nietzschean moment, and it also happens to be the Taoist moment, which is that the moment's already here, right? There's nothing to strive for. For Nietzsche, there's no alternative to life, right? Amor fati, love your fate. Don't just accept it. Don't tolerate it. Don't be like, well, these are the cards I was dealt. Love your fate. Freaking love your fate. Everything that happens to you is what happened to you. Therefore, what else is there to do, right? So you have, what is your position? You're going to rail against what's actually happening to you? That's madness. That's madness, says Nietzsche, right? And for the Taoists, it becomes a kind of sickness. And then for Reich, Wilhelm Reich, it becomes a kind of sickness to wish things other than as they are is to have a certain hostility to life. Title of Alan Watts' book, you know, This Is It. And what I love about it is there's so much play in that name and how to say it, you know. The title and his position is all of the play of This Is It. There's nothing else. Point is, there's no outside. There's no transcendence, which is funny, you know, when you're reading a sort of Zen text. You would think that, well, it's religious, there should be some kind of transcendence. But transcendence is, for Watts, a kind of active participation in this life. It's not transcending life itself. It's transcending the bullshit. And transcendence might not even be the right word. Maybe there is no transcendence. You know, of course, you know, Deleuze talks about the transcendental planes. But those are constitutive of this life. They're not the outside of life. They are a kind of fold within the sort of machinic operations of life, of existence. But this sort of this folding in, this no outside, you know, takes all these different forms, you know, and I think of Derrida, you know, and the Il n'y a pas d'or text. There's no outside the text. There's no, you know, that sort of gets read as a kind of cynicism or a kind of almost a nihilism, but it's the opposite. It's an absolute radical affirmation. I mean, that's the Derridean Nietzscheanism in there, right? That his amor fati, there's no outside. It's all this play, and it doesn't have to be a problem, you know? Like, I mean, reading Derrida doesn't always feel joyful, although I found some joy often reading Derrida. But you know, you don't exactly get that exuberance that you get when you're reading, you know, say Nietzsche, or that, you know, or even, you know, Alan Watts. But there's no, you know, it's so funny to be hostile to your moments, to say, I don't like the way I look. What the fuck? I mean, that's how you look. I don't like this. I don't like what's happening. I mean, this, we are what's happening, man. There's nothing else. There's no alternative. Of course, that's not to say that things, you can't change your environment. You can't change the situation. You can't change the systems in which you flourish or don't flourish, for that matter, right? I mean, of course, you know, there is a non-doing doing, the wu-wei, right? There is a mode of operation in which you can kind of lean in and tweak and refine and shift the very terms in which you flow and operate in order to catch the wave of your vitality. Not because something's wrong with where you are, but because you are part of what's happening. And you seek your vitality, just as the wave will pull, you know, crash into the shore at its, you know, angle and velocity and inclination, pull away at that very particular speed. That's what we do. That's what we're always doing. I mean, we're expressing our own becoming. We're expressing our mode of becoming through this world, of moving through this world, of reaching and stretching, and, you know, where that flow in the lava lamp, sometimes falling apart, coming together, you know, distending, stretching, folding, pleating, oozing. And so sometimes to say that this is it is not to reject activity, but it's to overcome the dichotomy between activity and passivity, and to lean into this other position, you know, that you know, I take from the, you know, the great poet and sophist Lauren Green, the notion of poise, you know, between active and passive, absolutely at rest and absolutely ready to act. And I really see this you know, I could see it at the level of history, at the level of the sociological, at the level of the of intellectual history. For me, it's an everyday, very real problem. I mean, I go to make my dinner or wash the dishes. And what a funny thing. Oh, damn, I got to wash the dishes. Damn. You know, but of course I got to wash the dishes. Of course. I think the rise of immediate distraction, of immediate communication really plays, you know, really takes us out, right? Really, really cuts through us at this funny angle, right? So that, you know, I'm sitting there making my, you know, I'm not ashamed to say it, making my neti pot, and I can feel that I'm not just totally making my neti pot. That part of me is listening. Did I hear my phone? Is that an email? Is there something else? Is there? It might not be as explicit as I'm waiting for someone to text me, or will someone text me, or will someone call me, or it can just be a sense of there's something else. Is it on TV? Oh, I don't know. Is it another song? Is it another, you know, article? Is it another, you know, porn site? Is it another, what is that other thing? As opposed to just sitting there making my, you know, salt water with a little grapefruit seed extract to make my neti pot to wash out my oversized schnoz, you know, so I don't get sinus infections. You know, as opposed to that just being the moment. And I think I bring it up and I talk about these, you know, these idiotic details of my life because I have to believe, I think that I'm not alone, that, you know, everyone I encounter, you know, in my escapades, something's wrong. They think something's wrong. Something's wrong with life. Something's wrong with them. Something's wrong. And the only thing that's wrong is thinking something's wrong. You know, and then the beautiful sort of, you know, double moment there is, you know, it's okay to think something's wrong and to embrace that, right? To not judge yourself for thinking something's wrong. I had somebody call me recently who had a freak out with some drugs. She's a young, relatively young woman of age and all that, but you know, she'd had a bad encounter, you know, got high and got the fear, as Burroughs called it, got the fear. And, you know, sort of ended up in the ER and they're giving her, you know, Valium, whatever the hell they're giving her. And I was like, you know what? And she was very stressed about this. I was like, well, don't be stressed about your stress. Don't be anxious about your anxious. It's normal to sometimes be anxious. You know, I mean, and that's the great, I realize, you know, the paradox that lies at the heart of the Taoist enterprise, right? Which is, you know, you accept everything as it is, just as it happens, but that's work to get to that place, right? But that work is itself a kind of always already disappears at the moment of its appearance, right? You will always already have been there. If that makes some sense, right? Because there is nothing else. You know, I recently, you know, talked about reading Lao Tzu and feeling while I'm reading it that I'm in the Tao. And my great teacher writes to me, he's like, well, of course, you're always in the Tao, but I understand what you're saying. And that's such a great moment. That's always the great Taoist moment, which is, you know, now I'm in the Tao. But of course, you always were, right? So there is no outside. And when there's no outside, you introduce these very complicated, interesting, and hilarious, and convoluted, and twisted logics that don't work so neat, precisely because there's nothing outside that's sure. There's nothing outside that's not part of the fray, that's not itself in motion. We're all in the freaking lava lamp, and it's all okay. There's no reason for it, you know, for there to be hostility. And, you know, I know a lot of you listen to this and laugh and be like, Caffeine, you know, you're a hostile man and you have a lot of hostility in you, and no doubt. But I, you know, I definitely have, you know, my issues with the state of contemporary capitalism and the things we have to do to survive and the state of contemporary parenting and you know, gender relations and all these things. I often find I wish were different. On the other hand, I also know, I'm also aware, I also have this understanding, or I seek this understanding of that. But this, I'm still here. I still take my joy here. It's why at some point that anyone who's very adamant about a certain ideology, right, who really gives up their moment, you know, for the better day, no matter what, whether they're a Christian or a communist or a radical vegan, or, you know, to me, it's all the same thing. It's all hostility to life. This is what's happening. Again, it doesn't mean you can't be that vegan or that communist or that Christian, you know, but it's the terms of which we relate to these things, it seems to me, that really matter, right? It's a question of a posture and how we stand towards them. Do we stand towards them with hostility? Do we stand towards life with hostility? Or is there always a kind of, this is it. Reading Reich's Function of the Orgasm, you know, it's a great book because it's also a kind of intellectual autobiography. He really traces the sort of genealogy of his own understanding. It's not just a laying out of a system like Hegel does, but really he punctuates it with a lot of these inflected moments of understanding. And he talks about his early days and being interested in psychoanalysis and being really a kind of Freudian disciple, for lack of a better word, and he realizes later he wasn't really, but you know, he meets all these different guys in the fields, and including Freud. He's like, everyone was always had a posture. When he meets Freud, there's no posture. You know, he said there was always an irony, says Reich. There's always an irony just to everything Freud was saying. Like, he kind of got it. He kind of gets that it's sort of, this shit's complicated and things just sort of flow, and it's not a matter of sizing it all up and understanding it all once for all, you know, once and for all. But it's certainly not a question of having hostility towards it. But of, you know, going with it, negotiating it, flowing with it, taking pleasure, and, you know, experiencing life as it happens, rather than constantly resisting, rather than having a sort of refrain of hostility.